This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. I'm Caleb Brown. The public pension crisis is a difficult one to understand. It's a crisis years in the making, and sophisticated mathematics obscure many of the troubling realities about these large, open-ended pension funds. Rick Dreyfuss is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation and at the Manhattan Institute. We discuss state pensions at an event on the subject held October 1st.
The issue that is perhaps most important in evaluating state pensions in terms of aligning the incentives of all the public sector actors with their actions and making sure that they're taking care of public sector retirees properly, the biggest issue to me seems to be how you discount those liabilities. Is that fair to say?
That's the biggest driver of the costs and the liabilities, and that ultimately determines how much money you have to put in the plan in a given year. So
okay.
That's correct.
So you're an actuary, but as I asked you just before we started recording, I said you're not one of these actuaries who thinks that 8% is appropriate on these essentially riskless liabilities. Is that's right?
Right. I think 8% is a bit too optimistic. In fact, the state of Rhode Island just brought an actuary in to look at their 7.5% assumption, and their assessment was they had about a 40% likelihood of achieving 7.5% over the next 20 years. So the question is, do you want to anchor your entire pension system around something that has about a 40% likelihood of attainment? And I think that's the risk.
Just to back up a little bit for people who are not real clear on this issue, when it comes to state pensions, it's a little complicated. The government sets a rate that they expect to earn on a portfolio, and then that is the rate at which they then discount their liabilities. The higher the rate, the less the government has to contribute to the pension plan and vice versa. And this, when you choose high rates, as so many pension funds have, they find themselves in a lot of trouble. That's fair.
Well, that's right. You're looking at long-term accumulations, and employees contribute 5, 6, 7% of their pay often. And then the employer makes a contribution, but as you point out, it's based on these long-term assumptions that the assets will grow and accumulate at 7, 8% per year, and that's the basis upon which contributions are made.
So what happened within the actuarial profession that essentially made this expected rate of return on a portfolio equivalent to the discount rate at which these government bodies discount liabilities? It's my understanding that that assumption, that equivalence, does not exist almost anywhere else in finance.
Well, this is a matter of state law in terms of every state determines its own funding policy in terms of their oversight of their pension system. And so they bring an actuary in who is providing a service, but the actuary is not clairvoyant, and the actuary works for the customer. So ultimately, it's up to the pension board in that state to approve or reject that number. Now, that said, there are accounting standards that have to be met as well, and they have their own set of assumptions to be used. So it's almost like you're dealing with two sets of books, one's for the accountants and then one for the state policymakers.
Could you unpack that a little bit?
Sure. Pension plans are based on future expectations, based on long-term assumptions. And typically, as you point out, the interest rate assumption is the most important of any assumption that on a long-term basis. And based on the higher the rate, the less you put in right now because you assume that it's going to accumulate. So the state bodies determine this in consultation with their actuaries. But separate from that, the accounting industry now is weighing in terms of how a state's books are presented, which is separate from how well the plan's funded. And not surprisingly, the accountants have their own standards, their own interest rate assumptions, and their own methodology. So when the actuary computes the numbers, they have to do it two ways. They have to do it, one, for the state policymakers based on their assumptions, and then number two, do it to be in compliance with the Government Accounting Standards Board and the methodology that they prescribed.
Now, at 8%, as a discount rate, which again is in many cases I think an aspirational rate. It's difficult to achieve that year in and year out, as actuaries do assume in their models. Do you think that has been one of the primary drivers of these state pension funds getting into hedge funds, getting into these investments that promise high rates of return with higher risk?
I do, to a point, because if you take the 8% as a given, then what you do is try to almost retrofit a portfolio around that in order to achieve the 8%, which not surprisingly is going to involve higher amounts of risk, otherwise known as volatility in the system. And that, there's something to be said that, that's a contributing factor. But I go back to the point that, they may make 8% in a given year, but it's you really don't want to anchor your entire long-term fortunes based upon an expectation that may have a 25 or 35 or 45% chance of being achieved, any more than an individual would want to set up a personal financial plan on the same basis.
Well, but don't you think it's even bigger than that? Because these pension funds are set up to operate into perpetuity, and an 8% annual expected return on a portfolio is not what reality will yield. It's a highly variable rate of return, perhaps centered on 8%.
Right. And politics comes into this quite a bit, as you can imagine, because changing the interest rate from 8 to 7, reducing it by whatever increment you want, let's say, that's going to require more money to go into the plan. So now the policymaker has to figure out what program will be trimmed or what tax will be increased. And that is not something a policymaker likes to do. The way I like to summarize it is that providing a pension plan has a high political rate of return to elected officials, but funding it has a very low political rate of return. And so it's not surprising to me at all that you see rosy assumptions, costs being deferred, and otherwise not keeping these plans current, that is, funding benefits as they're earned.
You said that the rate of return assumption on the portfolio was a matter of state law. Why have so many states, and it feeds partly what you were just saying, why have so many states and why have so many actuaries gone along with this idea that we should assume a fairly high rate of return on a portfolio and then make that equivalent to the discount rate? They do not seem to be directly connected at all.
Well, the 8% rate is in fact the discount rate.
No, I understand that. They've set those as equivalent, but when you are discounting a liability, has always been my understanding that you discount it at the likelihood of having that payment come due. And for state workers, it's almost certain that those payments will come due.
Right. Now, what you're describing is sort of an economist's view of pension financing, which is not necessarily incorrect. I would point out that while the government will be around in perpetuity, and while it can be argued that that payment will be guaranteed because of the existence of the state capital, it is by no means certain that every employee is going to actually retire from the workforce and live an average life. So this is not like a bond. There are what they call contingencies, or things that happen between someone who's 25 and 35, and by the time they're 65, some retire, some don't. So I'm not attuned to the these risk-free discount
rates.
Okay,
like before we recorded, you said I'm not one of these actuaries who says 8% is reasonable, but I'm not one of these economists
right.
who says 3% is
That's
reasonable.
Right.
So building on that,
right.
I guess you're talking about mortality tables, that sort of thing, of calculations of people who are not going to collect a pension.
Well, just to answer your question, I like what the private sector is required to do to fund their pensions. They have to use an index, an annually adjusted index that is specific to the duration. Now it's based on the bond rates. And, you know, there's some discussion here in Washington about what that index should look like. But I think that's a reasonable sort of middle ground, if you will, in terms of a model for the public sector. Because one problem you have is in the public sector, if one plan picks 8%, another one picks 7, how do you compare how well those two plans are doing when they're using completely different assumptions? So, and mortality, as you point out, is a factor. People are living longer. But, you know, ultimately, the actuary is a consultant. The actuary is not a legal entity, and they're an advisor, and certainly not clairvoyant. So they're there to try to help the plan sponsor make a good decision.
Given how politicians respond to incentives like everybody else, and the public choice problems associated with delegating investment decisions to people who are political appointees, and the varied interest groups that are surrounding public pensions, not the least of which are the pensioners themselves, and of course people who might be wanting to provide investments to the pension fund, how should the public sector be involved in providing retirement for their workers?
Well, all those items you point out are political problems, and you know, my thesis is that politics and defined benefit plans are a toxic combination. And I think you're right. You can point to a number of potential conflicts or states that you know only invest in their own or have a segment of their portfolio invested in their particular state for in the interest of economic development, when in fact it really they're there as fiduciaries and they should be overseeing a diversified fund in the interest of a balanced portfolio. But politics comes into the equation.
Rick Dreyfuss is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation and the Manhattan Institute. You can watch our event on state pensions held October 1st at our website, cato.org.